no vacía. Pintada está mi casa del color de las grandes pasiones y desgracias. Regresará del llanto a donde fue llevada, con su desierta mesa, con su ruinosa cama. Florecerán los besos sobre las almohadas y en torno de los cuerpos elevará la sábana su intensa enredadera nocturna perfumada. El odio se amortigua detrás de la ventana. Será la garra suave, dejadme la esperanza, dejadme la esperanza. Dejadme la esperanza. Pintada, no vacía. Pintada está mi casa.
La revista de la semana. A 40 años de una guerra con efectos disparejos. Ayer, 2 de abril, se han cumplido 40 años del que fuera el último mayor conflicto bélico internacional en América Latina. Bien se puede decir una guerra con efectos disparejos. La aventura se inició con la decisión del entonces dictador militar argentino Leopoldo Fortunato Galtieri de tomar las Islas Malvinas por la fuerza. Estas islas son llamadas Falkland por los británicos, quienes las ocupan desde 1833. Un episodio trágico que dejó a 650 soldados argentinos muertos y a unos 255 británicos también muertos durante esta conflicto. Como se sabe, fue una guerra inútil, ya que a su término las cosas quedaron tal como estaban antes de iniciarse el conflicto, excepto por las fútiles pérdidas de vidas. Claro, con la perspectiva del tiempo, al analizar este suceso político-militar, uno puede decir que todo fue materia de graves errores de cálculo. Sin embargo, para el pueblo argentino, solo trajeron un gran beneficio. Como resultado de la derrota, la dictadura militar llegó a su fin. Galtieri sería pronto desplazado del mando y la democracia retornaría a una Argentina que no solo había tenido que soportar a la más sanguinaria de las dictaduras militares de su historia, con 30.000 asesinados y desaparecidos, sino que además había dejado al descubierto a una casta militar incompetente en su propio oficio, hacer la guerra. Quedaba claro para el pueblo argentino que para sus militares una cosa era abatir a militantes de izquierda inermes y hacerlos desaparecer, y otra, muy distinta, ir a una guerra de verdad. Un año antes, Galtieri, en complicidad con el jefe de la Marina, almirante Jorge Isaac Anaya, y el de la Fuerza Aérea, brigadier Oscar Domingo Grafinia, habían destituido a su predecesor, el general Roberto Viola. En los cálculos de Galtieri y Anaya, recuperar control de las islas para Argentina parecía como una movida genial. Henchidos de un pletórico aire patriótico, los militares argentinos, en especial Galtieri, se veían siendo objeto de la adoración de su pueblo, el que, agradecido por la reconquista de las islas, los convertiría en héroes nacionales y les aseguraría un gobierno por muchos años. Los militares argentinos también calculaban que el gobierno de Londres no reaccionaría y que en poco tiempo la recuperación de las islas sería un hecho consumado. Por cierto, nada más lejos de lo que realmente ocurrió. Irónicamente, el gobierno conservador de Margaret Thatcher en Londres, que hacia comienzos de 1982 se hallaba con una seria baja en su popularidad, fue el primero en sacar provecho de la situación. No era por lo demás difícil retratar la situación como una agresión contra un pueblo pacífico por parte de una banda de militares conocidos por la brutalidad que ya ejercían contra su propio pueblo desde que habían tomado control del país en 1976. No costó mayor esfuerzo para Thatcher y su partido revertir sus fortunas y retomar sus laureles para ella como la dama de hierro, dispuesta entonces a dar batalla contra esos militares que se habían atrevido a atacar parte de lo que aún quedaba del antiguo imperio. Los militares lo debían pagar caro. Y la dama de hierro respondió, aunque no debe desconocerse que contó con alguna ayuda. Sus aliados de la OTAN, en primer lugar. Estados Unidos le facilitó importante soporte de inteligencia por sus satélites que podían observar los movimientos argentinos. El presidente francés, François Mitterrand, dado que Francia había vendido los poderosos proyectiles Exocet a la Argentina, Mitterrand no tuvo problema en pasarle a Londres la información técnica necesaria para minimizar su acción. Chile, entonces bajo la dictadura de Pinochet, aunque técnicamente neutral en el conflicto, facilitó estaciones de escucha y de monitoreo a los británicos, un hecho que la propia Margaret Thatcher admitió cuando visitó a Pinochet, mientras éste estuvo detenido en Londres, haciendo público su agradecimiento por la ayuda prestada. La fallida invasión argentina duró solo 3 meses, pero las secuelas, principalmente para los excombatientes argentinos, la mayor parte jóvenes conscriptos sin adecuada preparación ni equipamiento, incluyendo vestuario adecuado para el clima invernal de la zona, todos esos efectos siguen hasta hoy. En cuanto a los efectos políticos, fuera del más importante y positivo, el descrédito de los militares y su consiguiente remoción de la vida política argentina, no ha habido más. Para las Naciones Unidas, el tema aún es un caso de soberanía en litigio, pero no ha habido negociaciones sobre el tema. En términos históricos, la presencia británica en las islas es en cierto modo un remanente de los tiempos cuando el dominio el dominio marítimo era esencial en términos estratégicos. Gran Bretaña, hasta el siglo XIX la mayor potencia naval, se había preocupado de tomar posesión de puntos navales estratégicos en diversos lugares. Gibraltar en 1713, luego Chipre y Malta en el Mediterráneo, Hong Kong en Asia, más algunas islas menores en el Atlántico y el Océano Índico. A diferencia de colonias como las africanas o la India, que para Londres les representaban grandes ganancias económicas, estos puestos en lugares aislados no eran fuente de riqueza, su valor era estrictamente militar. Aunque en el caso de las Malvinas, en años recientes, se ha podido constatar la existencia de importantes depósitos de hidrocarburos, además de ser una importante área pesquera. Ello habría compensado por su hoy reducida importancia estratégica. A 40 años del fallido intento de recuperación, Argentina tiene claro que la única posible solución al tema tendrá que venir de una negociación. Pero el gobierno del Reino Unido no está muy dispuesto. Aparte de la importancia económica que las islas pueden tener tanto para argentinos como británicos, está el escollo que representan los habitantes de las islas, los kelpers. Una posible estrategia argentina que de algún modo se trató en los años 60, cuando hubo algunas negociaciones, particularmente un acuerdo muy preliminar en 1966, sería la de tratar de convencer a los kelpers que ser parte de Argentina no sería mala idea. Pero claro, la memoria de la invasión ha creado una natural desconfianza que hace difícil una futura convivencia. En Londres también hay cierta desconfianza después que, luego del traspaso de Hong Kong a China, algunos de los compromisos adquiridos por el nuevo país que se hizo cargo del ex enclave colonial no se habrían cumplido. Tampoco ayuda el que haya voces de ultranacionalistas en Argentina que planteen que los kelpers no tienen ningún derecho. Una postura que, por cierto, contradice los principios de las Naciones Unidas respecto de los ciudadanos de territorios coloniales. Pero hay que admitir que conciliar los intereses de los kelpers y los de Argentina sería tarea muy complicada y a veces se ve casi como imposible. Las heridas psicológicas de los excombatientes, por otro lado, ellos abandonados en el frío austral y mal equipados, enfrentados a un adversario mejor motivado y adiestrado, seguirán abiertas por mucho tiempo. Y la solución al diferendo no se ve venir. Todo a partir de un fatal error de cálculo de unos estrategas militares que no tenían muchas luces. The Weekly Review, 40 years after a war with mixed effects. Yesterday, April the 2nd, was the 40th anniversary of the last major international war in Latin America. It is fair to say a war with mixed effects. The adventure began with the decision of the then Argentine military dictator Leopoldo Fortunato Galtieri to invade the Falkland Islands, called the Malvinas Islands by the Argentines, who also claim sovereignty over the archipelago. The war was a tragic episode that left 650 Argentine soldiers dead and killed some 255 Britons. As it is known, it was a useless war, since at its end things remain as they were before the conflict began, except for the futile loss of lives. Of course, with the perspective of time, when analyzing this political military event, one can say that everything was a matter of serious miscalculations. However, for the Argentine people, they brought only one great benefit. As a result of the defeat, the military dictatorship came to an end. Galtieri will soon be removed from command of the country, and democracy will return to an Argentina that had not only had to endure the bloodiest military dictatorship in its history, with 30,000 murdered and disappeared, but also exposed a military caste that was incompetent in its own job to wage war. It was clear to the Argentine people that for its military it was one thing to shoot down unarmed leftist militants and make them disappear, and quite another to go to a real war. A year before, Galtieri, in complicity with the chief of the Navy, Admiral Jorge Isaac Anaya, and the chief of the Air Force, Brigadier Oscar Domingo Grafinha, had dismissed his predecessor, General Roberto Viola. In Galtieri and Anaya's calculations, regaining control of the islands for Argentina seemed like a genius move. Filled with a plethoric, patriotic air, the Argentine military, especially Galtieri, saw themselves as the object of adoration of their people, who, grateful for the reconquest of the islands, will make them national heroes and assure them a government for many years to come. The Argentine military also calculated that the London government would not react and that in a short time the recovery of the islands would be a fait accompli. Indeed, nothing could have been further from what actually happened. Ironically, Margaret Thatcher's Conservative government, which by early 1982 was at a serious low point in its popularity, was the first to take advantage of the situation. It was otherwise not difficult to portray the situation as an aggression against a peaceful people by a gang of military men known for their brutality against their own people since they had taken control of the country in 1976. It took no great effort for Thatcher and her party to reverse their fortunes and regain their laurels as the Iron Lady, ready to do battle against those military men who had dared to attack part of what was left of the old empire. The military was to pay dearly. And the Iron Lady responded, although it should not be ignored that she had some help. Her NATO allies in the first place. The United States provided important intelligence support through its satellites that could observe Argentine movements. French President François Mitterrand, since France has sold the powerful Exocet missiles to Argentina, had no problem in passing on to London the technical information necessary to minimize its action. Chile, then under the Pinochet dictatorship, although technically neutral in the conflict, provided listening and monitoring stations to the British, a fact that Margaret Thatcher herself admitted when she visited Pinochet while he was detained in London, making public her gratitude for the help provided. The failed Argentine invasion lasted only 3 months, but the consequences, mainly for the Argentine ex-combatants, most of them young conscripts without adequate preparation and equipment, including adequate clothing for the winter climate of the area, continue to this day. As for the political effects, apart from the most important and positive one, the discrediting of the military and its consequent removal from Argentine political life, there have been no more. For the United Nations, the issue is still a case of disputed sovereignty, but there have been no negotiations on the subject. In historical terms, the British presence in the islands is in some ways a remnant of the times when maritime dominance was essential in strategic terms. Britain, until the 19th century the greatest naval power, had been concerned to take possession of strategic naval points in various places. Gibraltar in 1713, then Cyprus and Malta in the Mediterranean, Hong Kong in Asia, plus some smaller islands in the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. Unlike colonies such as those in Africa or India, which represented great economic gains for London, these outposts in isolated places were not a source of wealth. Their value was strictly military, although in the case of the Falklands, in recent years it had been possible to verify the existence of important oil and natural gas deposits, in addition to being an important fishing area. This would have compensated for its reduced strategic importance today. 40 years after the failed attempt of recovery, Argentina is clear that the only possible solution to the issue will have to come from a negotiation. But the UK government is not very willing. Apart from the economic importance that the island may have, both for Argentines and British, there is the stumbling block represented by the inhabitants of the islands, the Kelpers. One possible Argentine strategy, which was somewhat tried in the 1960s, when there was some negotiations, particularly in 1966, will be to try to convince the Kelpers that being part of Argentina would not be a bad idea. But of course, the memory of the invasion has created a natural distrust that makes future coexistence difficult. In London, there is also a certain distrust after the handover of Hong Kong to China. Some of the commitments made at the new country that took over the former colonial enclave were not fulfilled. Nor does it help that There are voices of ultra-nationalists in Argentina who claim that the Kelpers have no right at all, a position that certainly contradicts the principle of the United Nations with respect to the citizens of colonial territories. But it must be admitted that reconciling the interest of the Kelpers and those of Argentina will be a very complicated and almost impossible task. The psychological wounds of the former combatants, abandoned in the southern cold and poorly equipped, facing a better motivated and trained adversary, will remain open for a long time, and the solution to the dispute is not in sight. All because of a disastrous miscalculation by some military strategists who were not very bright. Good day.
Bueno, en el fichero latino de hoy, 3 de abril, tenemos entre los anuncios de interés público dosis de refuerzos de la vacuna contra el COVID-19. Están abiertas las inscripciones para vacunarse con la tercera dosis a las personas que tengan 18 años y más. Las dos primeras dosis ya están también disponibles para los niños entre 5 y 12 años. La provincia también ha anunciado que se empezará a dar la segunda vacuna de refuerzo o cuarta dosis a los mayores de 80 años. Consultar y reservar en línea en el sitio web Clic Santé, ya sea en francés o en inglés.
Y los eventos, exposición Hasta que la dignidad se haga costumbre, fotografías de Juan Gutiérrez, abierta al público hasta el viernes 8 de abril en el Hall del Cégep de Saint-Laurent, 625 Avenue Sainte-Croix, Ville Saint-Laurent, Metro du Collège.
En cuanto a las publicaciones, las ediciones en francés y en inglés del libro Presencia chilena en la Belle Provence se hallan a la venta en la librería de la Université de Montreal, esto es en el 1200 de la Rue Chambriand, en la librería Bertrand, en el 430 de Saint-Pierre, en el Montreal Viejo, en el internet, en la cadena Renobré, en la librería Argos, en el 1841A de Saint-Catherine Oeste, y en la librería Paragraph, esto es en el 2220 de McGill College Avenue. El precio es de $10 más impuestos.
Y el tiempo para hoy, según Environment Canada, la Oficina Meteorológica Nacional de Canadá. Nublado, con una temperatura máxima de 5 grados. Para esta noche nublado, con una mínima de 0 grado.
Y recuerde que si usted, por su organismo comunitario, tienen alguna información que desean difundir en el fichero latino, comuníquense con nosotros a Latin Time a nuestra dirección electrónica, laplaza.info@gmail.com.
O también puede enviarnos un mensaje en Facebook. Vaya a www.facebook.com/tiempolatino.latintime y de paso denos un like. Nuestra página Facebook también se actualiza ahora diariamente con noticias y reportajes sobre lo que ocurre en América Latina y el mundo. Síganos en Facebook.
Tiempo Latino es escuchado en América Latina y en todo el mundo a través del internet. Entre al sitio de CKUT en la siguiente dirección, www.ckut.ca.
Y usted puede acceder también a nuestro programa en cualquier otro horario, simplemente yendo al archivo de CKUT en el sitio web ya indicado y presionando Latin Time.
Ojos negros, bandoleros, negros volveré. Tuyo es mi querer, ojos negros volveré. Ojos negros, yo me muero por las chispas de ese fuego. Ojos lindos, andaré
Esto ha sido todo por hoy. Tiempo Latino es una producción del Taller Latinoamericano de Comunicaciones.
Latin Time is a Latin American Communications Workshop production.
Estuvimos hoy con ustedes.
Our team today.
Daniel Lara y Sergio Martínez en las voces.
Sergio Martínez and Daniel Lara at the mics.
Y Rommel Cajavilca en la producción técnica, la compaginación y la selección musical.
And Rommel Cajavilca in the technical production, edition and music selection.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT, nuestro próximo programa de International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT, next the International Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
Have a happy Sunday.
I'm Saul Brody from Philadelphia, PA, USA. You're tuned to the International Radio Report, 30 minutes of news about radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Welcome to the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. It is Sunday, April the 3rd. My name is Sheldon. I am here with Jill. We thank you for tuning in to our show today. You can reach us by email, radioreport@yahoo.com. We're live streaming and archived at ckut.ca. We have a Facebook group, International Radio Report. We are welcoming Chris, Danilo, Paul, Keegan, and Dan to the group today. We're at 749 members. And we have our YouTube channel with 596 subscribers. You can go to youtube.com/International Radio Report to get previous editions of the program. We usually have the new show up there within an hour or so after it airs on CKUT. So if you missed the show live, you can check it out there. We have a lot of information for you today, so we'll get right to it. We have wrapped up the CKUT funding drive for 2022. We want to thank all of those people who contributed last week and over the last 2 weeks. We had four additional people from the from those we mentioned last week. We have Mickey, Janice, Steve, and Ricky all contributing. And the total amount of the funding drive, the goal was $35,000. They're a little, just slightly over $30,000 as we're recording the show. And we do want to remind you that even though the funding drive has ended, you can contribute anytime you like throughout the year. ckut.ca/donate if you want to do it online. Or you can call the radio station 514-907-9424. I'm not sure how long that line will stay open, so you might probably be best to go to the website, make your donation directly through there. So we thank everyone who supported CKUT, and in particular those that supported the International Radio Report. So we're good for another year, I guess.
Yes, I guess. Thanks.
We certainly hope so.
Thanks for the pledge.
Yeah, very important. We want to remind you once again of our special feature that the CIDX Club has put together called Focus on Ukraine. All sorts of information about radio-related information, communications, feature articles, SDR updates, what have you. You can go to cidxclub.ca/Ukraine. And version 2 is there now as well. So you can two different files, version 1 and version 2. And version 2 has a lot of additional information and also some updates in it. So check that out at the CIDXclub.ca website. It's right at the top of the page. You can't miss it. Talking about our show, we have received word from Tim Gaynor in Australia. He operates a station on shortwave called Unique Radio. And he was off the air for a while, but he's saying, letting us know that he is turning the shortwave transmitter back on and has asked our permission to carry the International Radio Report once again. So starting on Saturday, April the 2nd, so the first one should have run already, and Wednesday, April the 6th, frequency 5035 kilohertz in upper sideband. He might also use 3210 kilohertz upper sideband if the propagation is okay. So the show is going to air Wednesdays at 10:30 UTC. That's Wednesdays, 10:30 UTC, and Saturdays at 0730 UTC. Again, the frequency 5035 kilohertz upper sideband and possibly 3210 kilohertz upper sideband. And that is Unique Radio in New South Wales, Australia. So we thank Tim for picking up the show again and getting it into his broadcast schedule for us.
Yep, good DX to try. And if you're in the Australian area, well, you'll be able to hear our show. This is pretty cool. There's the FCC that plans to hire to fight pirate radio. Now, we did have a news item, I think it's last year, where they were talking about maybe doing a little more about pirate radio and kind of making fines a little higher. So now they're following up with this, I guess. This is by Paul McLean of Radio World. The Federal Communications Commission, under Chairwoman Jessica Rosenwasser, plans to fill 15 new positions to help fight pirate radio using money in the 2022 Omnibus Spending Bill that was enacted this month. The Omnibus Bill will fund the federal government through September and include $5 million requested by the Commission to meet requirements of the Pirate Act that became law 2 years ago. The Pirate Act demonstrates that Congress views enforcements against pirate radio broadcasting as a priority. The Commission wrote to Congress in submitting its 2023 budget estimates to Congress. In addition to increasing the potential penalties for pirate broadcasting, the Pirate Act imposes significant new responsibilities on the Commission. Among other things, the Pirate Act requires the Commission to 1. Conduct annual enforcement sweeps in the top 5 radio markets. 2. Conduct follow-up monitoring to determine whether pirate broadcasters identified in the sweeps are still on the air. 3. Is to publish a pirate radio broadcasting database that clearly identifies all licensed broadcasters operating in the AM and FM bands and all pirate radio broadcasters. And 4. Submit an annual report to Congress summarizing the Commission's implementation of the Pirate Act and enforcement activities in the prior fiscal year. Additionally, the Pirate Act specifically provides that the Commission must conduct the annual sweeps without decreasing or diminishing its regular pirate radio enforcement efforts. Lean, accountable, and efficient is what they want to be. So for 2023, the FCC is seeking a substantial increase in funding for FCC enforcement generally, $48.2 million, an increase of almost 25%. The Commission's request to Congress for 2023 budget authority is $526.4 million, up about 2.7% from what it is spending in 2022. Within that number, it is seeking about $390.2 million for activities that are paid for by regulatory fee collections of 4.3%. Most of the rest would be for managing its spectrum auctions program, down slightly from last year. The Commission said that since 1994, spectrum auctions have generated more than $233 billion for the government use, at a total cost of less than 1% of that amount. The agency also seeks an increase in full-time job positions in creating a lean, accountable, and efficient commission that works for the American people. The commission requests 1,600 full-time equivalents funded by budget authority from regulatory fee offsetting collections, spectrum auctions program, and other budget authorities provided by the President and Congress, it wrote. The Commission published a budget in brief that is available on the website in a PDF format. So I guess they are getting a little more serious on cracking down pirates. And, you know, from what we see here with the spectrum and talking about who is using that spectrum, they seem to be mostly enforcing on what is the AM and FM band, the broadcast band. That seems to be mostly where they're going to focus their efforts. You know, it is amazing. I still am surprised at the amount of FM, especially FM pirates that can be heard, like in, you know, New York and the big cities in the United States. So I guess, you know, the big companies, the major broadcasters are kind of telling them, look, do something, because we don't want to have these on the spectrum with us.
Yeah, I think the five cities that they're talking about, probably New York, Miami, possibly Boston, I think. It's been pretty active scene in Boston, I think. I'm not sure what the other two might be. Maybe Chicago, Los Angeles. I'm not really sure. But definitely New York and Miami. Those two for sure are the band is full of them. And I think they're, like you said, they're really focusing on AM and FM because that's where the potential for interference with licensed stations, that sort of thing. So I think probably the shortwave pirates are pretty safe. You know, they're not in the same league as these almost commercial pirates that are on the air, particularly on the FM band.
Yeah, and like we said, you know, most of these pirates probably get caught because somebody complains. And in the AM and FM market, well, there's a lot of players there that are capable of complaining that somebody's on the bands. So what's happening with our sun? Well, a lot of things are happening with our sun. This week particularly, we had tons of solar flares. One particular moment where there were like 17 solar flares in succession in just a few hours from the same sunspot. And all of that was actually, we were waiting for a coronal mass ejection to arrive and create some really strong geomagnetic storming. And it did arrive. It arrived actually while I was doing my live show. Somebody just got in their chat room and said, hey, it arrived according to spaceweather.com. And it did create some geomagnetic storming, but it stayed at the G1 level. It wasn't as strong as they actually had predicted. But still, a lot of people have seen auroras all across the northern states of the U.S. The closer you are to the poles, the bigger the chances of seeing auroras, especially in dark areas. That has subsided a little bit, but there's still some activity. The sun is active. The sunspot number is 84. The solar flux around 150, which is very nice. And there is, in the forecast, a coronal hole that is actually having some solar wind that could reach us on April 3rd or 4th. So that could, of course, cause some more disturbances today and tomorrow. And we have to keep an eye out in case there are more solar flares as the sun is getting more and more active. This is something that actually might happen. But overall, propagation, when it's in more quiet conditions, propagation is surprisingly good. Lots of stuff on the shortwave bands, especially from, you know, like Radio Thailand. And KBS World Radio has been reported almost every day on its 15575 frequency at 13 UTC in North America. So this is nice. And of course, the best way to really know what propagation looks like is to turn on that radio and listen.
This is Glenn Hauser. On the air since 1987, you're tuned to the International Radio Report, 30 minutes of radio about radio, every Sunday morning on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and live streaming around the globe at ckut.ca.
We take you next to Afghanistan, and a report from La Prensa Latina on March the 28th. Four radio stations shut and six journalists arrested in Afghanistan's Kandahar. The report comes from Kabul. The Taliban government forced four local radio channels to shut down and arrested six of their workers in Afghanistan's southern Kandahar province, media watchdogs said on Monday. Hujatullah Mujadidi, who heads the Afghanistan Independent Journalist Association, told EFE that the Islamist regime, with the closure of the radio stations and the arrest of journalists, has increased pressure on the media. He called on the Taliban to stop acting tough on the media. We request the government to stop such actions and negotiate the problems, if any, through the Ministry of Culture and Information. The Afghan Journalist Center also condemned the arbitrary and illegal moves and called on the Taliban government to adhere to the media law approved by its government. Growing Taliban media curbs have sparked concerns from human rights groups since the Islamists seized power in Kabul on August 15th last year. Curbs have drastically limited critical reporting in Afghanistan. Human Rights Watch last month said the de facto Islamist government had carried out far-reaching censorship and violence against Afghan media in the district and provincial centers. Taliban harassment and attacks on journalists outside major urban areas have largely gone unreported, causing media outlets in outlying provinces to self-censor or close altogether, said an Afghan researcher at Human Rights Watch. In many provinces, the Taliban have virtually eliminated reporting on a wide range of issues and have driven women journalists out of the profession. The latest media curb comes after the Taliban recently barred BBC from broadcasting in Afghanistan. Mujahideen condemned the BBC ban and called on the Taliban government to revoke it. He said the media is a link between Afghanistan and the world. Banning the international media is not good for the people of Afghanistan and nor for the government. We call on the Taliban government to end this issue and allow the international media to broadcast in Afghanistan. The Taliban have not commented on the latest media curbs. In a related story, the Taliban has barred BBC TV programs from schedules. BBC TV programming has been taken off air in Afghanistan after the Taliban ordered local channels not to broadcast content from international partners. Calling it a worrying development, the BBC said it would affect more than 6 million viewers of Persian, Pashto, and Uzbek language service programs. The BBC Persian TV channel can still be accessed, but only by the 20% of Afghans who have satellite TV. Radio and online services are unaffected. Other international broadcasters whose programming was taken off the air by the ruling government include Voice of America, German company Deutsche Welle, and China Global Television Network.
That was kind of expected over time. We were wondering exactly what was the time frame and how long it would take before a lot of those broadcasters would be censored or taken off the air, and it's unfortunate. And that's why we need shortwave. Prague's Solidarity Radio targets Ukrainians from the Agence France-Presse. Ukrainian refugees fleeing the war to the Czech Republic got a fresh morale booster this week as a new radio station based in Prague started offering broadcasts in Ukrainian. The new channel, called Radio Ukraine, broadcasts news, tips and to refugees, music and fairy tales for children, as well as spiritual comfort passed on by Ukrainian churches. Run by the Media Bohemia Group, comprising several radio stations, it broadcasts from an office building in central Prague via a mobile app and on the internet. It's a solidarity radio, said an on-air manager, Natalia Churikova, who spent 27 years working for Prague-based U.S.-funded Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. We are targeting Ukrainian war refugees who have moved here and trying to give them information they need to start a new life here before they can go back home, which we hope will eventually happen, she told AFP. The Czech Republic, an EU nation of 10.5 million people, has received more than 300,000 refugees since Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. A graphic artist and singer, Sofia Tatomir, left Ukraine for Prague 2 days later following an invitation by her worried aunt who lives in Prague. The 22-year-old, hailing from western Ukrainian city of Kalush, is working for the radio as a presenter, a dream job for her. It is my first time in Prague. It came all of a sudden, and I just ended up here working for the radio, doing my best to help Ukrainians with what I can do best, Tatomir said. Her family helped her find a job owing to an ad posted on the internet. I have to communicate and interact with our listeners. One of Radio Ukraine's 10 employees who wants the radio to boost ties between Czechs and Ukrainians. Ukrainians already formed the largest minority in the Czech Republic before the war, comprising some 200,000 people. Following the influx of refugees, the public Czech television started offering its evening news in a Ukrainian version, while Czech radio transmits live broadcasts by Ukraine's public radio channel. Churikova said Radio Ukraine's chief goal was to help the refugees feel more at home in the foreign country. Czech people help a lot, But when someone talks to you in Ukrainian and plays you a Ukrainian song, it will make your heart feel warm, she said. Trikova said she saw the radio, which launched Tuesday as a medium taking listeners by the hand and accompanying them all day long. No other medium will create this mood, encourage you, make you think, and entertain you at the same time. She said outside the small studio with tables for two presenters and a Ukrainian flag on the wall, "The mood is really nice here, and we're trying to pass it on to the people who have experienced terrible things, and now they need to calm down and start a new life." So this is definitely a nice story. Nice to see that they are using radio, they're using media to try to cheer up people that have been affected terribly by what's happening.
Yeah, there's so many stations that are doing this, new stations popping up, existing radio stations in many countries, not just in the Czech Republic, but we've had stories from Poland and a few other countries surrounding Ukraine who are receiving literally thousands of refugees coming in. So it's nice to have a friendly voice to be able to give them some information about what, who knows, could become their new permanent homes. It's changing a lot of things for a lot of people, that's for sure. Yep. Continuing with coverage, we have news from Radio Taiwan. Radio Taiwan International is adding new frequency for Russian language service. This comes from the SW Welling Post. On March 27th, Radio Taiwan is using the frequency of 6005 from 2000 to 2030 UTC, broadcasting to the European part of Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus. Broadcasting on 5900 from 1700 to 1730, and on 9490 from 1100 to 1200 UTC will also continue. So adding Russian programming, that is probably targeting, you know, with some credible information that might offset some other stories that the local people in Russia might be hearing. So there's a lot of that sort of counter broadcasting going on out there now as well.
Buffalo Wild Wings launches radio station. This is from Radio Inc. on March the 30th. The restaurant launched its own branded radio station on iHeart Radio called B-Dubs Radio, powered by Wings, Beer, and Sports. The digital station features contemporary music, sports programming, and exclusive vignettes, such as weekly commentary from sportscaster and radio personality Dan Patrick, as well as the week's top sports matchups, key rivalries, trivia, and more. We wanted to create our own unique ongoing radio station that incorporates two of our guests' key passions, sports and music, says Bob Ruland, vice president of marketing, Buffalo Wild Wings. It's another great way for us to engage our guests outside of our restaurants while also letting them know about specials and activities they'll find when they come in for the next big game. Listeners can tune in to the new B-Dubs Radio at iHeartRadio.com and on the iArt Radio app. So some chicken wings with that.
Yeah. I guess they won't be running ads for other restaurants on the station.
I would not guess.
But if that takes off, I'm sure you might see more of that sort of thing going on. At least they're not using up radio spectrum. They are doing this online. So we've seen a lot of online radio stations popping up all over the place. So this is kind of a unique one, though, tied in directly to a restaurant chain. So I thought we'd throw that little lighthearted story in with a lot of serious stories that we've been having lately. So so if you're heading to a Buffalo Wild Wings, wherever you might be, see if you can tune in to the B-Dubs radio station at iHeart.com and on the iHeart Radio app.
So there's some upcoming ham radio contests.
Yeah, things have fired up again for the coming weekend. Quite a bit of activity coming up. We start off with the Japan International DX CW contest, 0700 Zulu April 9th to 1300 Zulu April 10th. It's organized by the Japan International DX Contest Group. The objective is for amateurs around the world, DXers, to contact Japanese stations in as many Japanese prefectures and the JD1 prefix Japanese islands as possible. And Japanese hams can look to contact DX stations in as many DXCC entities and CQ zones as possible. It is CW only, though, and it's 1.8, 3.5, 7, 14, 21, and 28 megahertz bands.
And we have the interest group RTTY Worldwide Contest coming up, 12 Zulu April 9th to 18 Zulu April 10th. And the bands are 3.5, 7, 14, 21, and 28 megahertz. The mode is RTTY.
We have the Straight Key Century Club holding their weekend sprint-a-thon. It is 1200 Zulu April 9th to 2359 Zulu April 10th. The bands are 160 through 10 meters, no work bands, and that is a CW contest.
The New Mexico QSO Party, 14 Zulu April 9th to 02 Zulu April 10th, organized by the Sandia Vista Amateur Radio Club. And the bands are 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, 10, 6, and 2 meters. Modes are phone, CW, and digital.
The Georgia QSO Party is 1800 Zulu April 9th to 2359 Zulu April 10th. That's organized by the North Fulton Amateur Radio League, 160 through 6 meters, and that one is phone and CW.
I was about to read the Hungarian Silent Key Contest, but there would not be a lot of people there.
No. The bands are quiet.
The Hungarian Straight Key Contest, 15 Zulu to 16 Zulu, April 10th, so just 1 hour. Organized by members of Radio Club HA8KUX. The band is 80 meters from 3520 to 3570 kilohertz in CW.
And finally, the ARRL Rookie Roundup, SSB, 1800 to 2359 Zulu, April 10th, organized by the ARRL. The mission of the ARRL Rookie Roundup is to encourage newly licensed operators, or rookies, in North America, including territories and possessions, to operate on the HF bands and experience competitive amateur radio operating. It will be 80 through 10 meters and will be in single sideband.
Lots of stuff to listen to and to, of course, participate if you're a ham radio operator.
We have one late-breaking piece of news that we want to share with you from Nick Sharp in the UK. Some information he received from Tony Rogers on the on his IO group. The Forces TV is promoting a Falkland Islands 40s Day on Monday, April the 4th, which includes a program called My Secret Falklands War, When Britain's Military Took to the Airwaves. And that'll be at 2000 hours in the UK. It's focusing on the 40th anniversary of the Falklands War, yes, 40 years ago, and in particular focusing on a British clandestine radio station that took to the airwaves called Radio Atlantico del Sur, which was in Spanish, aimed at the Argentinian troops. It's pretty interesting. There's going to be a documentary about this. It's called, as I said, My Secret Falklands War. So the best place for you to go to watch this documentary will probably be on the Forces News YouTube channel on Monday, April the 4th at 2000, that's UK time. So we'll put a link to all of this up on our Facebook page. So we thank Nick for passing that along.
Cool. That sounds great. And yes, 40 years, time does fly. And we have some late breaking news. This is from Shortwave Central website. The closure of the analog broadcast of the Voice of Greece has been delayed, even temporarily. So there was a decision that was taken last Wednesday and signed by the CEO of ERT. Public Radio and Television announced that at the request of the Ministry of Defense, the Avlida Shortwave Broadcast Center will remain active until May 31st, and they will re-evaluate the conditions for further continuation or not of its operations. So in an earlier decision, ERT had stated that its broadcast on shortwave would end on March 31st. So this is good news. Voice of Greece still there. Now, The battle hasn't been won yet, as it's extended until May 31st, so we've got to continue writing to them, letting them know we are listening, to try to keep Voice of Greece on shortwave. So we are out of time.
We are. Thank you very much for tuning in today. If you have any information, you can pass it along to us through our Facebook page. It's probably the easiest. Look for International Radio Report on Facebook and join the group if you haven't done so already. We'll be back again next Sunday. We hope you can join us then with the next edition of the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
This is the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Station, broadcasting on frequencies. Please.